Welcome to the Wampa's Lair podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, have been frozen upside down to the cave ceiling with nothing to do but talk all things Star Wars. So make yourselves comfortable, but keep a wary eye out for trouble here in the Wampa's Lair.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This is episode number 135, A Sense of Wonder. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me, the Savage Opress to my Darth Maul, we have Carl LeClaire.
I guess I'm the apprentice.
Well, you're also more buff than I am, so.
Yeah, but those are fake buffness. He's all, like, jacked up on steroids and drugs.
Well.
I'm all natural. I'm organic muscular. Did you see my Prius? Oh, man. Jason, it's been a little while since we've done a Wampa's Lair.
Yeah.
You're so busy talking Time Lords.
I'm sorry.
I don't care. It's all good. You talk Doctor Who because you love Doctor Who.
Yes, it's true.
Been doing it with one of our faithful listeners, Paul Gann.
Yes. Yes. So that's been a lot of fun. It's actually going pretty well. So when we're done recording here, I have to edit another episode. So
welcome to my world, Jason.
Yay!
I can't wait because I'm going to make Jason do all the editing for the Wampa's Lair soon, too. You're like, well, since you're doing that one, but as you all know, we don't edit.
Right.
That's why Jason's always dropping swear words without, like, anything. Surely I jest.
Of course. You jest.
Jason. So.
Yes.
We had one of the best polls in a while where we asked a great question.
Yes. One of your favorite questions.
Yes.
Is your favorite movie?
Wow, Jason.
Your favorite movie from The Empire Strikes Back was what I was about to say, and that's completely false. Why don't you ask the question since I can't say it?
All right, if you insist. But the the poll was, what was your favorite track from The Empire Strikes Back soundtrack?
Yes. Yes. And, well, we got some good responses over here. In a tie for fifth place with one vote each, we got the Ice Planet Hoth, which of course opens up the film. We got Clash of the Lightsabers, Yoda and the Force, which is where the X-Wing is being risen out of the swamp, and my pick, The Rescue from Cloud City and Hyperspace, which is a long track from the end of the movie, starting from about when Luke gets his hand chopped off to when they escape from Vader and the Star Destroyer Executor. So, I really like that one. Especially the intense strings as they're flying away from the Star Destroyer.
Mm, so yeah, that is a good one.
So, but in a tie for fourth place, we had, and this was surprising to me, the Imperial March only got two votes.
Mm-hmm. Overplayed. It's like your pop hit on the radio.
True.
When I think of Star Wars, I immediately think of the theme and Imperial March, because those are played at, like, every band concert.
True.
So, maybe that's why.
True. But also tied with two votes with the Imperial March was The Rebel Fleet and Han Solo and the Princess, the love theme from Empire Strikes Back. In third place, with three votes each, was another long track, that being the Carbon Freeze, Darth Vader's Trap, and Departure of Boba Fett track. Primarily due to a lot of music there in the Carbon Freezing Chamber. In second place, with four votes, was The Asteroid Field. And sitting atop the heap in first place with five votes is Yoda's Theme. And that is the one that you picked, is it not?
My old friend.
Of course it is. It's like to me, it's just the most beautiful song in all of Star Wars. There's just something that really it does. It just captures the, you know, the simple wisdom of Yoda. And it's just it's such a lovely little song that just evokes this mysteriousness to it. It makes you think of just this wise old person, and it's so gentle and serene. And I remember back to it, like, geez, this was like 2 years ago now when we did that like top five Star Wars songs episode. But this was my number one. A lot of my top ones were, you know, the kind of the softer songs. And I just love these songs because they do. They mellow me out, and they really help me connect with Star Wars. Like, as soon as Yoda's theme starts, I'm taken back to my childhood, to playing Star Wars in my cousin's bedroom, to just listening to Yoda talk and listen to him be so funny. And just this, like, the beautiful, mystical swamps of Dagobah. Oh, I'm getting taken there right now. And it's just so good. Like, this to me captures the feeling of Star Wars for me. And this is why I love it. And I think a lot of people really enjoy it. Like, listen to this little right here. It's just so fun, playful. Okay, sorry. But I mean, it's just such a lovely song. And yeah, I mean, I can't say enough about Yoda's theme. It's the perfect song in Star Wars. So yeah.
Nice. Nice. I can't say anything better than you already have, so I won't.
You're like, Carl,
but I really do like it. So
Carl, you've rambled enough.
Say what?
You'd be like, Carl, you've rambled enough for both of us.
No, I don't mean that.
But yeah, no, I mean, it's such a lovely song.
So, it really is. It really is.
And my close second would have been The Rebel Fleet as well. I think that's a great song.
Gotcha. Very just nice.
Captures that feeling of hope.
Gotcha. Exactly. Yeah.
Jason's like, let's move the hell on, Carl.
Well, stop putting words in my mouth, Mr. LeClaire. We have a great matchup for you at the
end
of the show.
Can I put Fritos in your mouth instead?
What?
Who doesn't
put what in my mouth?
Fritos.
Fritos. Fritos. That would be tasty.
Who doesn't
Although
like
I'm not hungry at the moment.
Oh. All right. Moving on.
Give me an hour, though. But we have a great matchup for you at the end of the show, so stick around for that. But before we jump into our topic...
Yes, we did have some sad news this past week about the passing of Christopher Lee, who was, I think, 93 years old.
Yes.
This guy, I mean, he kind of rekindled Dracula back in the, what, 30s or 40s?
No, the 50s, late 50s.
Oh, wow.
Taking over from Boris Karloff? Was it Boris Karloff?
You're not asking the right person, so I don't know.
I'm asking...
I know, you're asking yourself.
Asking myself
out loud,
in the air
like
around
an insane
me.
Person.
Yeah, but I think it was Boris Karloff who really originated them on that character on screen.
Okay.
But yeah, he and Peter Cushing... starred across each other, usually as villain and hero, in numerous horror Hammer horror movies back in the late 50s through the early 70s. So he had a career that was almost 70 years long, you know, just as a career, which is phenomenal, and was basically working up until the time he passed. He was still making movies, you know, even now. But of course, known to us all as Count Dooku, from episodes 2 and 3, one of my favorite characters from the prequels, and one of my favorite actors in general. So, I was very, very sad to hear the news of his passing.
He is without doubt, he encapsulated the villain of the prequels. And he was certainly Count Dooku is my favorite, one of my favorite characters in Star Wars as far as villains go. And I think he did a great job. Christopher Lee was phenomenal. And the amount of sword work he was still able to do at such an old age. I know they did have a stunt double for a lot of it. But he did do, I mean, this man is someone who had been trained in sword combat for much of his acting career. So he was more than capable.
At least at one point, held the world record for most on-screen sword fights.
Wow.
And I think he still holds that, but at least at one point he did.
Arnold Schwarzenegger's right behind him, right?
Arnold does not fight.
Give me that sword!
Oh, man. But he actually has he told a story in an interview I saw one time, and I think it's his right pinky finger is permanently crooked because he had a sword fighting accident with, oh my gosh, why am I blanking on his name? Earl Flynn. Back, you know, when Earl Flynn, who was renowned for his swashbuckling movies and TV stuff, had a little too much to drink at lunch before they went back to film a scene.
Great.
So, but yeah, the man was phenomenal. Not only, you know, very imposing physically because of how tall he was, but it just regal and impressive, and definitely knew how to have a commanding presence on screen. In whatever he did. So
yes,
I will be very disappointed to not get any more new Christopher Lee films.
Yeah, he was. I mean, he was a phenomenal actor. Not that I know him for much, but he certainly brought a. To me, he was kind of the Alec Guinness of the PT. You know, just kind of this older, wise actor who probably brought a lot to the cast just by his presence.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, he didn't teach Hayden Christensen a whole lot about good acting, but that's okay. You can't teach something that just can't learn. I'm kidding. But Jason was having some fun with me before we started recording. I told him I was going to call him on it on the show.
Oh, boy.
So I was making Jason do Jar Jar lines as Count Dooku. So, Jason, can you tell us about your home?
Okay.
City, can you take us there?
Yes. No,
I started later.
It was this one.
Excuse me, but the most safest place would be Gungan City. It's where I grew up. Is a hidden city. Doesn't that just give the line much more gravitas?
Then you gave us another. You gave me another one, Jason.
Oh, Jar Jar doing a Dooku line. Was it that one that you
yes.
wanted? Or,
yes.
Okay. Mastering Windu, you have fought gallantly. Worthy of recognition in the archives of the Jedi Order. But now, it's a finished. Surrender and your lives will be spared. Oh, boy.
So there you go. There's a fun mashup for y'all. Courtesy of Jason Hunt.
I can just see people's eyes crossing over that one.
I can hear the laughs that will be coming.
I hope so. Oh, goodness.
Oh, man. But, yeah, we couldn't go through the episode tonight without at least saying something about Christopher Lee, the incredible Count Dooku.
Yes.
Who's known for so much more, but for us Star Wars fans, that's what he'll forever be to us.
Exactly. Exactly.
But, Jason, we have an interesting topic tonight.
Yeah, and you came up with this one, and I really, really like it. And it is... we're going to be talking about, you know, what in Star Wars makes us wonder, that catches our imagination. It's, and you put it in a way that I'm blanking on right now.
Yeah, just, you know, Star Wars captures that sense of wonderment that we all have. And those of us who are hardcore Star Wars fans is because we are continually caught up in that wonderment that is Star Wars. And actually, this topic came out of seeing Jurassic World the other weekend, but... because that movie, the last movie that really made me feel this way was probably Guardians of the Galaxy, but there's so few movies that come out anymore that really capture that feeling of wonder. Even like these big, like action films, to me, they're always just, look at all the CGI we can throw into a movie. It doesn't necessarily capture you, but I don't know. When I left Jurassic World, I was just like in the state of wonder, and I was like, man, I haven't felt this in a long time. But it's like, but Star Wars is the pinnacle of my sense of wonderment. So this would make a great episode to talk a little bit about what is it about Star Wars that just captures those feelings of wonderment.
And I really like it. So
I'm glad you do.
I'm really looking forward to this.
I've been looking forward to this.
My powers have doubled since the last time we met, Jason.
Good. Twice the pride, double the fall.
And then no lines for a while.
Right. Exactly. They let their blades do the talking.
Yes.
All right.
But Jason.
Yes.
I'm going to kick this off.
You do that.
By stealing from you. No, I'm kidding.
Oh.
I'm going to let you do that one.
Okay.
I think more than anything, what Star Wars captures the sense of wonderment is this ability to play in Star Wars. So what I mean by that is, I guess, a lot of people in our boat, Jason, who kind of grew up with Star Wars in between the films, you know, between the sagas and stuff,
mm-hmm.
Most of our introduction to Star Wars was through the toys. And that's actually true of a lot of people even back in the 70s. You'll hear about how they had these Star Wars toys and then they finally saw a movie. And I think just the Star Wars toys themselves allowed me to like play in this galaxy that was so big and it was so vast. And it gave you this ability to just be creative as a child, and continue to be as an adult. But, you know, you had all these really cool toys and you had these very intricate stories with so many different characters that it gave you the freedom to kind of create your own stories, to create your own myth within the myth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, you know, that just captured this feeling of wonderment. Like, I liked playing with other toys, but there was something about Star Wars, like we've talked about in the past, but there was something about playing with your Star Wars toys that just allowed you to play in this bigger world and tell your own story within that world. So like as a kid and even as an adult, like just being able to play in that world, and you know, you look at all these fan films and this, that, and the other thing, and there are people that still like that sense of wonder that they had, they can expound upon it. They can play with it because you're allowed to. And there's so many avenues to go with.
Yeah. So, no, that's a good point, because there's something inviting and something easily accessible to jump in and just sort of continue on that story or start a new story within the Star Wars universe with your own imagination, whether it's with your toys or you and your friends who got a bunch of sticks shaped like guns or lightsabers and you're running around outside. You know, there was just something really inviting about that, and something that was just always very easy to do.
Yeah.
Whereas other franchises wasn't quite that simple, because, you know, sometimes you had to really construct a very, you know, trust me, some of my friends and I tried this, you had to construct a very, you know, specific situation if you were doing something that wasn't Star Wars. Mm-hmm. Whereas Star Wars, it was just like, you jump in, you pick your characters, and then it's, you know, if you're the good guys, you got to fight off the Galactic Empire, and if you're the bad guys, you got to, you know, try and catch those rebels, you know, and it was really easy to just start something and go from there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But, no, it's a good one. I really like it.
Thank you. What do you have?
Well, one of the things that, you know, and for me, when I was making my list, I decided to stick to more like in-universe things.
Yeah, I was trying to.
Well, that's fine. You know, I almost included some out-of-universe stuff, so I'm glad you picked that one. But one of the things I'm going to start with this one, because I know you'll have a lot to say about it, that always gave me a sense of wonder is just the whole concept of the Force. You know, just, you know, It's a broad enough concept to be easily accessible to anybody of a spiritual or religious nature, but just the depth of the Force for the characters, you know, what the Force means, how it operates through them, what sort of, you know, quote unquote special powers the Force can give characters, like push or pull or, you know, choking, you know, Force lightning, you know, all these different things. It was just something that was always amazing and fantastical, and it you know, sparked, you know, my imagination and just gave that sense of wonder to, you know, use the phrase that we're going to be using a lot today, mm-hmm. In my mind. And then learning about it as I got older and finding out how much deeper that went and, you know, how much it meant to Luke and how much misunderstood it was for Anakin. And the juxtaposition of that and, you know, the difference between the approach of the light side versus the dark side and all this different, these different avenues of the Force. It never ceases to make me pause and think about it, because there's always something new that you can take from it or pull out of it with the Force too. So I'll be really interested to see what The Force Awakens really means, you know, and how that's going to expand our knowledge of the Force even more, or lack of knowledge of the Force, because sometimes the more you know, the more mysterious and mystical it gets. So, but I know you have a lot to say, so.
You kind of said a lot of what I was going to say, though. So, you know, I mean, yeah, that's exactly it. The Force is this, it is something mysterious, and it is beyond the visible realm. You know, I mean, Yoda gives us that great monologue on it to Luke and Empire anyway. But it's just this power that you're able to tap into, which then affects everything around you. It gives you this ability to do things that might have seemed impossible. And I think that captures that sense of wonderment. I mean, fans' first experience of the Force is Obi-Wan tricking some stormtroopers. You know, there's just something mysterious about it. It's just so interesting and cool. And, you know, you kind of stated, Jason, you know, there's all these different things you can do with the Force. And it's something beyond. And I think that's what's so cool. Like, I think that was, you know, that was George Lucas's intention of creating this thing called the Force. It is, you know, as Mark Hamill often says, religion's greatest hits. but it is. He wanted to evoke that sense of awe in something beyond you.
Right.
Now, you know, there's varying debates on whether the Force is, you know, something personal or just simply an energy field that is non-personal. But, you know, we can't really say for certain. But there certainly is something that allows you to reach beyond yourself. And I think that compelling movement out of the self is so human. We always are trying to reach for something more and something beyond. And the Force is kind of just this creation of the Star Wars universe that is just beyond, that is constantly causing you to reach out. And especially with that, what we'll see from our heroes and their attempts to understand it and to understand their relationship with it and how to use it.
Right.
But the Force, for sure, I mean, it is the most wonderful aspect of Star Wars. Full of wonder is what I mean. Not just wonderful, but full of wonder.
Yeah.
And it is. It's just it causes you to reach outside of yourself. And I think that's just so cool. There's something special about the Force too. I mean, it's always revered in the films, and you know, it's something that takes practice and discipline. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It just, you want to be able to use it.
Yeah. So yeah, no, there hasn't been one of us Star Wars fans who hasn't pretended to use the Force when you pass through an automatic door or when something's just out of reach, trying to grab it with the Force. You know, there hasn't been one of us who hasn't tried that. But, you know, also on a much deeper level, you know, it's some of us, you know, use the philosophies of the Force, primarily espoused by Yoda and or Qui-Gon to some extent, to, you know, help shape the way we treat each other, shape the way that we live our lives. I know for a fact that some of our Larians do that, or it gave them the access to explore their own religious or spiritual ideas. Mm-hmm. It provided that interest, that spark of interest, to further explore that in their own personal lives.
Yep.
No, it's an amazing thing, and I'm, like I said earlier, I'm really curious to see what The Force Awakens really means.
Yeah, me too.
You know, because that could be something really huge for the Star Wars universe,
right? And I think we're going to learn something about the Force in light of it. You know,
mm-hmm.
So.
All right. Well, why don't you give us another one?
Okay. I'll go with Star Wars' ability to seize the imagination. I mean, it's kind of no duh, but you know that it's this compelling feeling of wonder when your imagination is sparked to life. And what I always think of is just the iconic scenery and settings of these films. You know, they're so very distinctly different from the world we live in, yet real. You know what I mean? They're they're different but accessible because of their realism to them. And, you know, I love, you know, still so many, like, I mean, I've talked about the scene ad nauseum, but when Luke crashes his X-Wing into the Dagobah swamps and you have that pulled back shot of just the swamp and the fog and the mist and the clouds, I mean, mm-hmm. I'm just like, wow. I just like, it just captures me. Or when they're flying to Cloud City and these orange clouds and stuff. I mean, it's so cool. Or this endless cityscape in Coruscant, you know, when, you know, Obi-Wan and Anakin are racing through after Zam Wessel, or even, I mean, I still love the scene where Padme's combing, brushing her hair on the little Verdana in her apartment and Anakin's talking with her. There's all those cheesy lines that I just overlooked because I just love this beautiful cityscape behind her. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, wow, this is beautiful to me. And it just draws me in and it's so compelling. So I just, you know, anything that can pull me out of myself and just leave me saying, wow, to me, that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. And Star Wars has such a great ability of doing that, of just giving you these iconically distinct places to just kind of fall in love with. And they just seem so cool. You know, they're
right.
There's something about them. Like, I want to go there. I want to go to Braytree Village on Endor. Like, you know, there's just something awesome about them.
I really want to go to Naboo and visit Theed and see the waterfalls and all that stuff.
I know you do.
It's so beautiful. And Alderaan looks really cool too. What we briefly saw of it, just the mountains and everything. I love mountains though. So, that should come as no surprise, but, of course, as I've said before, I'm also a fan of the desert. So, you know, Ryloth, Tatooine, I'll visit.
Jakku.
You know, Jakku. Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens on Jakku.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, these iconic images of location that they give us, these big establishing shots that they give us of these locations and destinations that, you know, there's definitely something distinctly different and distinctly alien about them, but there's enough in there to really connect us to them. And I agree
exactly
with you on that. And that sort of partly ties into one of my other points that I wanted to bring up.
So bring it up.
And that's just the vastness of the Star Wars universe, from all the different characters and species and places and technology and histories and of cultures and organizations like the Jedi Order and the Sith and the Senate. You know, just all these different things, the vastness of it and the amount of stuff that just seems to have been there forever in Star Wars is amazing to me. You know, one of the things I really do enjoy about the prequels is all the different types of characters and different places, you know, multiple different expanded, you know, locales that we get to see in the prequels. It really sort of broadens the galaxy more than the OT did, because they have more money and are able to do more things than they were able to do in the 70s and 80s. But, you know, even back with the original trilogy, there was just so much history, mm-hmm. you know, there. Especially, you know, Tatooine, 3PO is wandering through the sand dunes, and there's this giant skeleton of a crate dragon, you know, up on the dune. And that's been there for years. But, you know, it's sort of this idea of, well, how long did that crate dragon live to get that big? And how long ago did it die? And how long ago was that skeleton, you know, uncovered by the winds and everything there in the middle of the desert? It's just, there's so much history in that one little thing, you know. George Lucas didn't have to put that in there, but it's there, and it just gives this really sort of impression of time there, and just the vastness of the time and the vastness of the universe with all these different things, from, like I said, the technology, from like droids to starships to comlinks, for goodness sake, you know, to just all the different species. You got, you know, of course, your humans, Bith, Wookiees, you know, Nautilins, and whatever the heck Yoda is, you know, Twi'leks, there's so many of them, and they all live together, and they all do stuff together. And it's just amazing, you know. That's part of why it's so easy to go back to a previous point you made, Carl. Part of why it's so easy to just sort of put yourself in there and play in there, because there is so much that it's easy to just slip yourself in or take on a character, you know, from the movies when you're playing. And it's really easy and really accessible that way. And that's just one of the things that has always just, you know, made my jaw drop in amazement, is just how big and how vast and how deep and how forever that universe seems.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, there's so much to play around in, and so easy to bring yourself into it, because there are, I mean, it's literally another very alive world, and there's no reason you can't participate in it.
Right.
You know, so absolutely. I remember in the expanded or the EU novels for a little while there, I think it was specifically during the New Jedi Order series, they had that like galactic map with all the planets that we've been to, yeah. You know? And I remember when they first started doing it, I loved it. And then after a little while, I got kind of annoyed by it, because I was like, oh, it's making this huge galaxy seem kind of small, because they fit everything in, you know? And then they would have like unknown region beyond everything, but it's like, no, it's still big, it's still expanding, you know? And I think we got that from The Phantom Menace, though. Like that, you know, it's a great scene where, you know, little Anakin looks up and says, do they all have a system of planets? I want to be the first to visit them all, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's through his eyes right there that we, too, kind of participate in that of, like, yeah, this is just wonderful. There's so much to it.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, no, I agree. Although, I'm really curious, you know, speaking of maps, they released a book a couple of years ago, Star Wars Atlas, I believe it's called. And it's apparently a very thick book, and I'm really curious to take a look in that, just to see what's there. But anyway, you just brought up maps, and that reminded me of that. But I like maps in general, like, mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah.
So, yay! Geography was one of my favorite subjects in school. So. Anyway, how many more you got? I've got two.
I have a very little one and a little bit of a bigger one. Well, not... yeah. I have two.
Okay. Well, pick one and go for it.
Okay. I'll do my very little one.
Okay.
And it's the Duel of the Fates.
Nice!
Just that scene. You know, I mean, I'll never forget it. You know, for... all through the OT, we had some really cool lightsaber fights. But there was something... Whenever I saw that film in theaters... like, it just, I was just like, wow. It was that draw, that jaw-dropping experience of, like, this is so cool. You know, and it was. I got goosebumps every time I saw that in the theaters.
Mm-hmm.
And even when I saw it in 3D, you know, years later, it was like the same goosebumps came back. There was just something about that. It was like, this is so cool. These are the knights of old fighting with their weapons of choice. And it was just right. So incredible and so iconic. And, you know, that, even though it's just like one very specific part of Star Wars, it kind of captures that feeling of wonder, you know, into this like mythical battle between good and evil. It's like perfectly personified in that duel.
Yeah.
And it's just so fun. I love it.
Yeah. No, there was definitely a sense of, you know, while it was very much personal between just those three, Qui-Gon, Obi-Wan, and Darth Maul, that it also felt like there was something bigger at stake.
Yeah.
Something much, much bigger was at stake in that duel. You know, it had this sense of, to use an overused phrase, of epic proportions, you know, just the way that it would have had ramifications had it gone one way or the other. And of course the music definitely, mm-hmm. the name of the music definitely helps with that impression, you know, Duel of the Fates. The Fates is like one of the biggest, you know, broadest ideas that you can get. And it's, you know, the good and the bad And that's all that's fighting, and it's either good or bad, and that's what's going to come out at the end. And it definitely does have that big sense of grandeur. Grandeur, yeah. Maybe.
Sure.
I don't know if that's the correct word. But I totally get what you're saying there. And I'm going to piggyback off of that and just give another one of mine. This is a smaller one. And one of the things that always made me just wonder at is the lightsabers. I love the lightsabers. They're amazing. But, sure. You know, it's this laser sword. It's a little tube with a crystal inside, and the energy gets shot through the crystal, and that's what makes this blade of, you know, nearly indestructible energy. And, you know, that's the technical side of it. Yeah. There's this technical side that's really mysterious, you know, to how this thing works. But I've always just loved it, the sound of it, the symbolism of it, you know, within the Jedi Order itself, and then just, what it symbolizes as, you know, a sword for, you know, the medieval knights of old, basically, when Obi-Wan starts telling Yoda about, or, you know, Obi-Wan starts telling Luke about it in A New Hope. When I first saw that in theaters, you know, and Obi-Wan is explaining to Luke what the lightsaber was and how it was the ancient weapon of the Jedi Knights and not as clumsy or random as a blaster, a more elegant weapon for a more civilized age. You know, Luke is amazed and very interested, and I was sitting there in awe going, this is the coolest thing ever. Hmm. And that's one reason why I've always sort of attached myself to the Jedi as far as my favorite characters and, you know, what I focus on when it comes to these movies is the lightsaber. I find it fascinating and, you know, wish they were real, but that's another story. So I don't have too much more to say about that, but that, you know, something, yeah. I had to bring up.
No, for sure. I mean, the lightsaber is one of the most iconic elements of Star Wars, for sure. So, you know, it does. It just, you're like, I want one of those. I absolutely want one of those. I need to have one of these.
Exactly. Exactly. How, without giving it away, how big is your last one?
It's not that big.
Okay. Because I have one, but it's not like that big. It's more kind of silly-ish, but I'm wondering if we should just do mine first and okay. Yours.
Sure.
Okay. My last one that gives me just the sense of wonder, and this will come as no surprise to people, but it's just the characters of R2-D2 and C-3PO. As a kid, seeing these two droids, it was just really cool, and I really liked them, and I thought they were funny and that sort of thing. But as I've gotten older, it's just these characters aren't supposed to function the way that they do. They're supposed to be droids, you know, very logical and that sort of thing, and you know, only do what their orders tell them to do. They're not really supposed to have much emotion. And yet, here they are. They seem very sentient, where they're not really programmed and able to do that, supposedly. And just the relationships that they have with each other and then with everybody else around them, with the various heroes around them, it's always been fascinating to me, you know. And, of course, we're introduced to them in A New Hope, you know, to, as our connecting point. They take us on this journey and help us learn what this universe is about and who all these important people are. And so for me, I latched on immediately to them as a kid. And so that whole aspect of them, you know, their literary, you know, purpose, if you will, as well as just them as characters, has always fascinated me and definitely gives me cause for a sense of wonder. And it seems like we're going to get something similar with BB-8. If our experience at Celebration Anaheim has any indication for what's going to happen in the movie, just seeing him roll out on stage, my jaw hit the floor. And, you know, I know you were stuck between Mike and I freaking out about BB-8.
Yes.
but yes. So I kind of hope BB-8 joins that little group of R2-D2 and C-3PO for me. But,
yeah. Yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of BB-8. in The Force Awakens. And I don't think we'll see a ton. I have a feeling we're not going to see. I think we'll see more BB-8 than we will 3PO and R2.
I think so too.
But I do hope we see 3PO and R2 a good amount, because they are. I mean, they're the most, in a sense, they're the most central characters in Star Wars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I agree. I think you're right. We will probably see more BB-8 than R2 and 3PO, but R2 and 3PO will be pivotal to something.
Absolutely.
So.
Absolutely.
So what's your last one? How are we going to wrap this up?
Well, we're going to wrap this up with Luke Skywalker. the hero journey of Luke Skywalker, it just captures that sense of wonderment too.
Oh yeah.
You just feel like you can be the hero too. You feel like you too can tap into this inner ability that you have and find the courage to have it come out and do something with it and stand up for something and stand for something. Just Luke's story just always, and Star Wars isn't the only story with a hero's journey to it. I mean, there's so many films that do that. But it's the fact that his is so human in such a different alien world. That it allows you to really just feed into it as much as you want. It's a myth, and that's what I love about it. Because, all those myths of old, they're very real, but so fantastical. And that's the thing, like Luke's story, Luke is a very real person. He's like a very real young man. But you can find so much of yourself in what he's going through. And I just, you just find in that journey, you can relate to him and mirror your own journey through his. You can find yourself trying to be somebody great because of this story.
Oh yeah, definitely. Growing up, I was always more of a Luke kid than a Han kid. And so I quickly identified with Luke. And of course, as I've gotten older, his hero's journey has taken on much more important significance to me personally. But yeah, no, I totally agree that he's definitely... his journey definitely is one that inspires the sense of awe and wonder. And you brought up the topic of myth repeatedly. And, I've talked before about how much I really do enjoy mythology in general. In fact, it's Star Wars partly inspired me to change my minor in order to focus more on the mythology and stuff and classics and that sort of thing. But and part of that was this hero's journey, because that's the most easily accessible mythological aspect in the entire thing, because it's something that spans multiple centuries, multiple millennia, and multiple cultures all at once. Mm-hmm. And it's still as relevant today as it was, 5,000 years ago.
Right.
So, and it's amazing, and the fact that Luke is able to, even though he's not perfect, able to complete that journey in a sense and bring it to a, I won't say ending point, but
a climactic point.
There we go. Thank you. Because the journey continues.
Right.
But to a climactic point with the redemption of his father, mm-hmm. a triumphant and victorious point in that journey is very inspiring, especially for young kids like me, seven, who saw this and went, "That's amazing. Mm-hmm. I want to do that myself." So, yeah. I'm really glad you brought that up.
Yeah. It's just, it's simple, but profound. They're just his journey is, again, it's a wonderful journey. Mm-hmm. It's just a nobody kid from a back world planet who becomes, a Jedi Knight, who becomes this great mythical hero that we hear about early in this story. And he becomes that. And he makes things seem possible. And I think that's something wonderful about the story of Luke Skywalker,
right.
Is that it makes you think that you too can do wonderful things, And
exactly.
And that's a beautiful aspect of Star Wars.
Ah, I love Star Wars.
I do too. I also am partial to it. So there you go. There's a few things that give us that sense of wonder in Star Wars. The thing is, it's hard to talk about these things, at least for me. It's hard to talk about things that make you amazed and filled with wonder.
Because it's such an abstract thing.
Exactly.
It's hard to put words to.
It's a feeling. It's a coming out of yourself is the way I would constantly describe it. And there's really no other words for it. It's just, you feel alive.
Yeah. The English language doesn't do this level of wonder and amazement justice.
Exactly.
And I don't know enough of other languages to know if they do it justice either. But
but let's assume they do.
But, you know, it is just one of those things that's... After talking about this, my heart feels very full right now. You know, I'm very happy, very... content, maybe, is the word, but, you know, my heart is very full after having this discussion. So, having this conversation brings warm feelings to my heart. And now Carl's kitty, Embo, makes a brief appearance on the Wampus Lair. Yes. He's not meowing.
Embo, say something. That wasn't him. That was me, everyone. Sorry. yeah. No, absolutely. You know, and that's the thing about Star Wars is the reason we all love it as much as we do is because it has captured that sense of wonder for all of us. And it constantly brings us back for something more.
Mm-hmm.
And that's to be valued and cherished.
Yeah.
So, and I can't wait to see how The Force Awakens and this new sequel trilogy will continue to do that. Because I know that it will. And I'm pumped.
Indeed. So, indeed. Oh, my goodness.
So, there you go.
Yay!
There are some aspects of Star Wars that leave us with a sense of wonder. But Jason, before we go, we do have a new matchup, and we wanted to give, again, kind of an homage to Christopher Lee in light of his passing. And this is a matchup we did very, very, very early on in the Wampa's Lair, so we didn't have probably a ton of participants because we were still a pretty new show. But I love this matchup, and I think it was a pretty close one back then. I'll see how close it is now. But Jason, what is that matchup?
Yes, this matchup pits the great Christopher Lee, aka Count Dooku, versus Mace Windu. Master and Mace. I love it. Anyways, a matchup we never saw in the Clone Wars or on film, but I think that would be really cool to see. And we want to know what you guys think about that. Who would win in that matchup between Count Dooku and Mace Windu? And so, Carl, where can they tell us?
Well, they can do it on Facebook, facebook.com/WampusLairPodcast. You can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/WampusLair, or send us an email at WampusLairPodcast@gmail.com.
Indeed. And we are also going to be playing the next episode of the Star Wars radio drama. We took a little bit of a hiatus due to our commentary show and our panel show that we just released. But we're going to pick back up with that. And where are we at, Carl?
We're at episode 8, Death Star's Transit. So if you want to stick around for the radio drama, that'll be on after the end of this episode.
Yes. So any other final thoughts before we wrap up this episode, Carl?
I think I'm pretty much good, Jason. What about you?
I'm really good. I am in a very wonder-filled mood right now. All right. Well, that wraps up this episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This has been episode number 135, A Sense of Wonder. Be sure to check out us along with all the other great podcasts at the Star Wars Reports Second Airborne Division of Podcasts at StarWarsReport.com. But until next time, for Carl, I'm Jason, and we will see you in the Wampa's Lair.
Star Wars, based on characters and situations created by George Lucas. Episode 8. Death Star's Transit. long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, there came a time of revolution when rebels united to challenge a tyrannical empire. The Princess Leia Organa, an Imperial senator from the planet Alderaan, is also a leader in the secret councils of the Rebel Alliance. But her most daring mission, to deliver the plans for the Empire's most awesome weapon, has failed. In a last desperate bid to get the information into Rebel hands before being captured, she has placed it in the memory banks of the astro droid R2-D2. And though Princess Leia is unaware of it, R2 has come into the possession of Luke Skywalker and the veteran Jedi Knight Ben Kenobi. Taken prisoner by Darth Vader, the Dark Lord of the Sith, Leia Organa is aboard a cruiser of the Imperial Starfleet en route to the Death Star, a stupendous space-going battle station.
Navigator, estimated time of arrival at the Death Star.
15 minutes, sir. We're getting clearance to enter the outer defensive zones now.
Carry on. Lord Vader?
Yes, Captain?
We're right on schedule, Lord Vader.
Excellent.
Lord Vader?
Well, Commander?
We have the prisoner outside, sir. What are your orders?
Escort her in, Commander.
Yes, sir. The prisoner will step forward!
Commander, you needn't be so curt with my guest.
Guest? I'm warning you,
Commander, you and your men may post yourselves by the hatch.
Yes, sir.
And that will be all for now, Captain.
As you wish, Lord Vader.
You've overstepped yourself, Vader. Firing on my ship and taking me captive, the Imperial Senate will not take this...
No longer presents any obstacle to me. You'd do better to worry about your own well-being, Princess Leia.
You won't succeed, you know. You will never be able to crush the rebellion.
I didn't have you brought here to listen to more of your pointless ranting, Your Highness. You're so upset that you haven't taken time to glance out of the main viewport at our destination.
The Death Star.
Quite right. Closer to completion than even your rebel agents estimated. I thought the sight of it might shock you into revealing that you knew of its existence.
I'd heard vague rumors in the Imperial Senate, nothing more. You've proved nothing, Vader.
You knew of the Death Star. You also intercepted the rebel message transmitting the technical design data for it. I'm offering you one last chance to tell me what you did with those plans. Once we've docked in that battle station, much harsher and more direct means will be used to question you.
You wouldn't dare. You'll never get away with this.
You think not? Look, Princess. Gaze upon the Death Star. The mightiest war machine that humankind has ever produced.
It's obscene. An obscene invention of twisted minds.
See that great circular dish? That is the prime weapon. Mere Starfleets pale by comparison. It has the power to destroy entire worlds.
You're insane. You, the Emperor, the military, you've all gone mad.
Don't be too preoccupied with the Death Star, Princess Leia. It is, after all, no more than a machine. But it is indicative of the might of the Empire. Strength that will inevitably crush your pitiful rebel alliance. Now let me ask you again. What have you done with the plans? I see you have no intention of cooperating. Very well, your fate is upon your own head. Rest assured that you will tell me what I wish to know. Commander.
Lord Vader.
Take her to her quarters. When we've docked at the Death Star, have her transferred to the detention levels there.
Yes, Lord Vader.
You're about to find out what it means to defy the Empire, Your Highness. A lesson that will soon be learned by the whole galaxy.
General Staff meeting still scheduled to proceed on time, Admiral Motti?
As soon as the Grand Moff Tarkin arrives, General Tag, he's gone to the docking bay to greet Lord Vader in person.
Vader, has he recovered the stolen plans?
I think not, General, but my sources inform me that he has taken a captive, the Princess Leia Organa.
Leia Organa? Has Vader lost his mind? He's gone too far this time, Motti.
This Dark Lord of the Sith whom the Emperor has inflicted upon us will be our undoing. And we remain vulnerable until the Death Star is fully operational.
You worry too much, Tag.
What? You still don't seem to realize how much of a threat the Rebel Alliance is. It's not just that they're becoming better organized and acquiring more ships and better equipment. They're driven, don't you understand? They're fanatics.
They may be dangerous to your Starfleet, but not to this battle station.
The Rebellion will continue to gain the tacit support of the Senate as long as they're...
Governor Tarkin, Lord Vader...
The Imperial Senate will no longer be of any concern to us. Lord Vader brings word that the Emperor has dissolved the Council permanently.
Senate dissolved?
The decree was carefully worded, of course, invoking the current emergency and the rebel violence. But the last remains of the old Republic have been swept away.
But how will the Emperor maintain control, Governor Tarkin?
Fear will keep the worlds of the Empire in line. Fear of this battle station.
And what of the Rebellion? If the Rebels have a complete technical readout of the Death Star, it's possible, however unlikely, that they might find a weakness and exploit it. If it's destroyed or even severely damaged, our main deterrent power will be gone.
The plans to which you refer will soon be back in our hands.
That is beside the point. Any attack made by the Rebels against this battle station would be a useless gesture, no matter what technical data they've obtained. The Death Star is now the ultimate power in the universe.
Don't be too proud of this technological terror you've constructed. The ability to destroy a planet is insignificant next to the power of the Force.
Don't try to frighten us with your sorcerer's ways, Lord Vader. Your sad devotion to that ancient religion hasn't helped you conjure up the stolen data tapes or given you clairvoyance enough to find the Rebels' hidden force.
Are you having difficulty breathing, Otto? Is your throat constricting as though some force were at work? I find your lack of faith disturbing, Marty.
Enough of this. Vader, release him.
As you wish, Governor.
This bickering is pointless. Lord Vader will interrogate Princess Leia and provide us with the location of the Rebel Fortress by the time this station is operational. That should take no longer than two more work shifts. We will then be free to demonstrate our full power and crush the Rebellion with one swift stroke.
I hope you find your quarters adequate, Princess Leia.
Vader, I demand that I be released from this cell and given access to formal legal proceedings.
Spare me your indignation, Your Highness.
What's that, Vader?
This machine? It is called an interrogation device. But there are those who call it other things.
A torture robot. This violates every rule of law.
The law no longer applies to you. You're a rebel. You've refused your one chance for mercy. And now, Your Highness, we shall discuss the location of your hidden rebel base.
Vader, keep that away from me!
The injection arm is primed. Now tell me, where is the rebel fortress?
I don't know what you mean.
So be it.
No. No. Let go! You stop that!
Hold still, you little fool!
No.
There is no escape!
No! No! Ah!
Your Highness, do you hear my voice?
Oh, no.
Princess Leia Organa, listen to my voice. Oh. Pay attention to my voice. That's right. You hear only my voice. Listen to it. Trust it. I am your friend.
No.
Yes. All your secrets are safe with me. You can trust me. I am a member of the Rebel Alliance, like you. We must know what you did with those tapes. The technical plans for the Death Star. What did you do with them? Where are they? The rebels need to know. Help us, Leia.
No.
We need them, Leia. What happened to those tapes?
No.
Where are they?
I can't.
You must. It's your duty.
Duty? No.
Yes. Your duty to our Rebel Alliance. Your obligation to Alderaan and to your father. Your father commands you to tell us.
Oh, my father.
Yes. Don't you wish to please your father?
Yes.
Then tell me what you did with those plans. Say the words.
But,
your father but, orders you to tell
father
us.
Father would...
You try my patience. Tell me what was done with those plans.
No.
Listen to my voice. You are now in great pain. Excruciating pain.
Oh, please.
Pain. A universe of it. Your world is nothing but pain.
Don't make it stop.
Tell me what I wish to know.
Help me.
Tell me what I wish to know. Where are the plans?
I can't help.
Your skin is afire.
Oh,
you're
no.
burning.
Oh, no.
Your nerve endings are in flames.
Oh.
Your flesh is being torn apart.
Make it stop. Please make it stop.
I will when you've told me where the plans are.
Please.
You're dying in torment. Where are the Death Star plans? Where is the Rebel Fortress?
I can't.
There are only seconds left. Your heart is about to burst, and the breath of life is nearly gone.
I won't.
You must! Stop! You are no longer dying. No longer in pain. Your mind is a blank. You float without a thought or concern.
Lord Vader, is anything wrong?
No! Get out! Wait. Have a medical tech see to the prisoner. Make sure she's suffered no serious damage. Have her fortified so that she can take another round of interrogation.
Yes, Lord Vader.
I shall be back soon.
Yes, Motti.
Death Star is now 100% functional.
Including our prime weapon?
Completely operational. This station can destroy any planet you care to select. The entire Starfleet in pitched battle couldn't stop us. You now have in your hand the power of life and death over every living thing in the galaxy.
Life and death.
Ultimate power. It rests with you now.
And with the Emperor, of course.
To be sure, Governor, that's what I meant. Only the Emperor is far from here. Actual command of the Death Star is yours.
Yes. Lord Vader.
I'm informed that the station is now fully operational.
Yes, Vader, that's correct.
We need only a word from the Governor to begin operations.
In the service of the Emperor?
Quite so. In the service of the Empire.
And the Emperor. He chose well when he selected you to oversee construction of the Death Star, Governor Tarkin. Lesser men might have harbored some foolish thought of betrayal. Ambition has been the downfall of many.
Indeed. But the Emperor is assured of my loyalty. Is that not so, Motti?
Implicitly, Governor Tarkin.
Now, Vader, what of the Princess?
She resisted the first interrogation session. Her innate willpower is formidable, and it has been augmented with certain physical and mental disciplines. No matter. I shall wear her down in time.
But how can that slip of a girl defy you? It's ludicrous.
I believe that she still holds hope that the stolen plans will eventually be delivered into rebel hands. Futile, of course, but it sustains her.
But you've broken hardened, resolute men with relative ease.
It is difficult to crush a prisoner's will until one has obliterated their hope.
I think you're too easy with her, Vader. Put aside your mind drugs and telesuggestions. There are old methods, tried and true ways of making a captive speak. Phantom pain is something against which she can defend herself. But against the real thing, her resistance will collapse.
I think not. She is a member of the Royal House of Alderaan and of the Imperial Senate. She has had access to many family and governmental secrets. She has been specifically trained and prepared to withstand conventional questioning. I would have to apply levels of pain so high as to risk killing her.
And what of it? She must be disposed of in time anyway.
But the princess is my one lead to the rebels. I cannot chance losing her just yet.
Well, you haven't much time, Lord Vader. With the Death Star completed, I must take vigorous action against the rebels as soon as possible. The Emperor expects great things of this battle station, and of me.
Without the information that Leia Organa is protecting, your best efforts will be wasted. But I will demolish her defenses, rest assured.
I've always found your methods needlessly elaborate, Vader.
They are effective. Nevertheless, I am open to suggestions.
That is wise. Stubbornness such as Princess Leia's can often be circumvented by applying threats to some third party.
What do you propose?
I think it's time we demonstrated the full power of the Death Star. I have it in mind to do so in a fashion that will be doubly useful. Admiral Motti?
Sir?
Tell your programmers to set a course for the Alderaan system.
With pleasure, Governor Tarkin. Lord Vader?
You see, Vader, the third party we shall threaten is the entire population of her own planet.
Alderaan is one of the foremost of the inner systems. The Emperor should be consulted.
Do not think to challenge me. You're not confronting Tag or Motti now. The Emperor has given me a free hand in this affair. The decision is mine. And you will have your information that much sooner.
Just so.
I'm glad you agree. The Empire is vast, and even a weapon as magnificent as the Death Star can only be in one place at a time. A major part of this station's value is as a deterrent. We must prove to the galaxy that we are prepared to use it at the slightest provocation.
If your plan serves our purpose, it will justify itself.
The stability of the Empire is at stake. A planet is a small price to pay.
We've entered Alderaan's solar system, Governor Tarkin, and assumed orbit around the planet.
Make sure we're well out of range of the explosion. Is our prime weapon prepared?
Primary ignition can proceed immediately upon your command, sir.
Here is the prisoner.
Governor Tarkin, I should have expected to find you holding Vader's leash. I recognized your foul stench when I was brought on board.
Charming to the last. You don't know how hard I found it signing the order to terminate your life, Princess Leia.
I'm surprised you had the courage to take the responsibility yourself.
Before your execution, I would like you to be my guest at a ceremony that will make this battle station operational. No star system will dare oppose the Emperor now.
The more you tighten your grip, Tarkin, the more star systems will slip through your fingers.
Not after we demonstrate the power of the Death Star. In a way, you have determined the choice of the first planet to be destroyed, and it is for that reason that I've had you brought here to the observation deck. Admiral Motti, have the view screens activated.
At once, sir.
Since you're reluctant to provide us with the location of the rebel base, Your Highness, I've chosen to test the Death Star's destructive powers on that lovely blue world you see on our view screens, your home planet of Alderaan.
But Alderaan is peaceful. We have no weapons. You can't possibly do that.
You prefer another target? A military target? Then name the system.
No, I absolutely will. Please!
I grow tired of asking this, so for the last time, where is the rebel base?
Dantooine. They're on Dantooine.
There, you see, Vader, she can be reasonable. Continue with the operation, Admiral Motti. You may fire when ready.
What?
You're far too trusting. Dantooine is too remote to make an effective demonstration. But don't worry, we shall deal with your rebel friends soon enough.
Commencing primary ignition, Governor Tarkin.
No. No, you can't do this.
Targeting computer locked in?
No, please, no.
Component energy synchronized.
No, Tarkin, please, I beg you, in the name of mercy, please.
Firing sequence.
No, no.
Our prime weapon is even more powerful than we'd calculated, Governor Dark.
Indeed.
Sensors indicate total destruction of the planet, Governor Dark.
No, Father! Oh, my poor, poor Alderaan!
Return her to the detention level, Lord Vader.
Oh, Tarkin. If ever there was a shred of humanity in you or these twisted creatures of yours, it's dead now. You're at war with life itself. You are enemies of the universe. Your empire is doomed.
Take her away.
You sent for me, Governor Tarkin?
Yes, Vader. We should be receiving word from our scouting expedition very soon.
Giving you your opportunity to, how did you put it, extinguish the rebellion?
Precisely. In the space of a single day, I will effectively eliminate all organized resistance to the Empire.
Indeed.
What of the search for the plans?
I am convinced that the Princess sent them down to the planet Tatooine with a pair of droids. A short time ago, a starship made a highly illegal blast-off from Mos Eisley spaceport on Tatooine after her crew exchanged fire with a squad of stormtroopers. The ship got through our blockade somehow and entered hyperspace, evading pursuit. The droids in question were thought to be aboard her.
And our stormtroopers were outfought? Our Starfleet evaded? How is this possible? Whose ship was it?
That is difficult to say. She had false identification markings and a forged registration. Moreover, she was an extremely fast and elusive vessel, probably piloted by one of the smugglers who congregate in that region.
So, the traitors have joined hands with criminals, and once again, you failed to regain those plans.
Our enemies are resourceful, but if you destroy the rebel base as you've resolved to do, the plans become a secondary concern. Is that not so?
Yes. When we've wiped out the fortress on Dantooine, the matter will be virtually settled.
Governor Tarkin, Lord Vader.
Well, what is it, Motti?
Our scout ships have reached Dantooine. They found the remains of a rebel base, but they estimate it's been deserted for some time. They're now conducting an extensive search of the solar systems.
She lied. Leia Organa lied to us.
I told you she would never consciously betray the rebellion.
Then her life is forfeit. Motti, have the Princess Leia Organa terminated. Immediately.
The Death Star is now a reality, capable of placing the entire galaxy within the Empire's grip. But on their way to the Alderaan system, unaware of the planet's destruction, are Luke Skywalker and his companions aboard the starship Millennium Falcon. Holding the galaxy's single hope for an end to Imperial tyranny. Star Wars, Episode 8 by Brian Daley. Based on characters and situations created by George Lucas. Featured in the cast were David Clennon as Mati, Keen Curtis as Tarkin, Brock Peters as Darth Vader, and Anne Sachs as Leia. The series was directed by John Madden, with sound mixing and post-production by Tom Vagley. Music by John Williams. Sound design for Lucasfilm by Ben Burt. Story editor for the series was Lindsay Smith. Casting and production coordination by Mel Saar. Executive producer was Richard Toskin. Executive producer for Lucasfilm was Carol Titelman. Star Wars was presented by National Public Radio in association with KUSC-FM Los Angeles with the cooperation of Lucasfilm Limited.